This is a Pinball News production.
I'm Steve Yates. I'm from Cleveland, Ohio. I've just been working on EM pinball machines for about a year and a half now. That's pinball in general. I wasn't working on solid state either, so it's just fairly new to this. I do have a degree as electrical engineer, so I'm sort of familiar with the schematics and electronics and all that. I was looking for digital electronics when I went into electrical engineering. When we started getting into coils and all that other stuff, wasn't really what I wanted to hear, and just kind of zoned out on a lot of that. But I have been working in electronics. I just software development instead, so I'm more used to. Okay, yeah. So I want to check. Does anybody in the back hear me? Okay.
Turn up louder.
Okay. How's that?
Yeah.
All right. Let me know if I start drifting off. I've been working in software development for my career. Still liked electronics and got into EM pinball machines, like I said, about a year and a half ago. So I've been working on that. What I found is that even though this is high voltage AC equipment, you know, using all these coils and such, it really can be treated pretty much as a digital system. You know, you've got AC voltages, but it's still, you're looking at relays that are either on or off. So we keep it simple like that. We don't have to get into the details of what the inductance of each coil is. It's not important to us for the most part. It'd be important maybe if we were designing a new EM pinball machine, know what coils to use. But for the most part, we don't work on it. We don't really care. Okay, first, I want to find out how many of you are familiar with EMs at all? Maybe the better question is how many haven't worked on EMs at all, or more solid state people? Okay. Very few of those, really. I thought there might be more. I'm going to go through real quick with what pieces we got in the EM machine, how it works, so we got an idea of what we're looking for in the schematic in the first place. After that, we'll talk about what a schematic is briefly, just to get an idea of what we're expecting to get out of a schematic. We'll break the schematic down into different sections so we know where to look. Look at some of the symbols that are used in the schematic. Hopefully look at a couple of the common circuit elements to get an idea when we see something, what it is, so you can just notice right off the bat that it's something real simple and real common. And an idea of how to use the schematic to track down any problems that we got going on in the machine. Basically, in logic, it's just like any other system. You've got some inputs, you've got some outputs, and you've got some logic in between there that controls how the outputs happen. Input are basically switches. Output, you've got lamps and coils, basically. Throughout the system, almost anything that you actually see the pinball machine do, there was a coil that drove that, you know, a solenoid or a motor. But even when the motor's going, the motor's actually driving some other solenoids. That's what you see. Everything you hear or see is happening here. You're looking at a light or seeing the result of a solenoid going. And for logic and storage, that's where it really varies from a solid-state type pinball machine. Instead of a computer system that's reading inputs and a program running that reads those inputs and determines what should happen based on the current state, we've got a series of relays and stepper units and a swirl motor that's in there also. The motor is there mainly to... it's got a few purposes. One of them is anytime anything has to happen within a given sequence, you need something to happen, then something else to happen after it, you basically need a motor. The motor controls the sequence. Otherwise, if you've got circuits wired up in series, thinking, okay, this is going to trigger, so it'll trigger this piece, which will then trigger this piece, that happens so quick that it's basically instantaneous. With the motor, you can introduce some delays. You can also use that to make things happen multiple times in a row, like when you're scoring 500 points. You basically score 100 points 5 times, and the motor is responsible for doing that. As far as inputs, player-activated switches, you've got the coin switch, credit button, and the flipper buttons. That's really basically about it as far as direct control that the player has over the game. You've got those buttons. Everything else the player can do, which is just pushing the machine around or controlling the ball with the flippers so that the ball activates the switches, which is, any of the rollovers on the play field, any pop bumper, when it hits the skirt on the pop bumper, drop targets, other stand-up targets, the auto switch. There's quite a few different switches that are going to trigger some logic within the EMP. Lamps, these are the outputs. Lamps, basically, you've got some lights on the back box, and you got lights on the playfield. Nothing too complicated there. Basically, a light that's either on or off. The coils, there's several different coils that can be fire in that will produce some output that you see. You've got the score reels. Everybody's familiar with those, just wheels that go around. There's basically a solenoid in that reel that fires once for every time that that reel should advance. There's a ratchet unit involved there, so as the coil fires and retracts, it makes it step forward one unit. Credit reel, real similar idea, just a big wheel that goes up and down. Credit reel's a little bit more complicated. Score reel only goes in one direction. You've got basically one coil on the score reel, it always goes forward, it never goes backwards. So it's only got the one coil. Credit reel has two coils on it. One to add credits when you win a free game. Another one to remove the credits as you use those. When you hit the start button, it'll remove credits. So there's a separate coil there. Chimes and bells are, again, driven by coils. There's a solenoid there that pulls a plunger against the chime or the bell. And that triggers. And then the bumpers, kickers, and flippers. Obviously the same thing in a solid state machine. You've got coils driving those. All those playfield instruments, just like you do on solid state. There's no really difference there between solid state and air. And again, the logic and storage, this is where it really gets different between an EM and a solid state. You've got, most of the logic is done by relays. We'll take a look at what a relay looks like real quick. It looks like most of you already know that. You've got three types of relays, though, really. You've got a standard relay that just the relay is energized as long as you've got power flowing to the coil. So if you've got power in that coil, you're going to see some all the switches on that relay are going to be activated. They're either going to be closed if they were open, or they're going to be open if they were closed. As soon as power is removed, they go back to the normal state. On a latch trip relay, that relay's got two separate coils on it. One coil acts real similar to the one on the standard relay, where when power is applied, the switches are activated. But then there's a separate step in there. There's a spring-actuated plate that, once that power gets applied and that relay is activated, it's going to stay in that state, even when power is removed. It just holds it there until there's a second coil on this relay. And once that second coil is energized, that will allow the plate to return to its normal position and switches go back to where they were. And you've got a reset bank, which is similar to the latch and trip relay, except instead of having one relay that's got two coils, you've got a series of relays that are all linked together. Each one has its own coil to energize the relay, but then that relay stays energized until the whole bank is reset. It really functions a lot like a drop target bank. It's the same idea. The target goes down, it stays down until it decides that they need to be reset. Either all the targets are down, or another player is up, or you're starting a game, the reset coil will fire, and all relays on that bank get reset. Stepper units, there's three different types of stepper units, basically. We've got a step-up unit, which is real similar to a score reel. You've just got one coil and a ratchet unit. That ratchet, when the coil fires, that unit steps up. And each time it fires, it steps up one notch. It just keeps going around one circle. It never resets itself. It's got no home position. So like I said, score reels do that. Match units do that, too. There's no reason to reset a match unit. You just want it to keep going, and that keeps it more random. It just goes on forever. Step up with reset is a stepper unit where it's got a home position that you want to be able to reset to that home position at any time. That's done for like the player unit. If you've got a four-player game, you're playing on player four, and you lose a ball and you want to go on to player one, you just trigger the reset coil, and that unit will step back, or it will just spring all the way back to position number one. Then there's step up and step down units. These are like the credit unit that we talked about, where there's two separate coils. One will step it up one notch at a time, the other coil steps it down one notch at a time. And that's used for the credit unit, for bonus unit, that does that because you want to add bonus as you're playing the ball. And then when you score the bonus at the end of the ball, how it does that is it just steps down one position at a time, adds bonus as it's stepping down. And so this is just a basic relay here. can't go too far, but you can see on there, we've got the one coil. The coil, when it's energized, it produces a magnetic field that pulls this one plate towards the coil.
Show you here. It pulls that down.
And as that pulls to the coil, the little switch plate next to it comes down. And you can see how one blade of each switch in that stack is, you know, longer than the others and then sticking into that plate. So as that plate moves, So as the plate here moves down one, all these blades are going to move a little bit. So you see these bottom three switches here, they are not making contact in the rest state right now. These coils are sitting there. These switches are not making contact. When this plate moves down, each of these will close, and electricity will start flowing through. So these are all NO switches, normally open. They're not conducting any electricity unless that relay is energized. Up top here, these are both make-break switches. You can see there's three arms in each switch. The top two are actually touching each other while it's in the rest position. When that coil fires and the plate moves down, the center blade on each of these is going to move down, make contact with the lower blade, and break contact with the top blade. You'll also see some relays that normally close switches, which is basically just like the top half of this make-break. There's, you don't have the bottom part there. So it's closed and conducting electricity while the relay is at rest, but then opens up when it's energized. And here's an interlock relay like I talked about. It basically looks a lot like the standard relay here. You've got a coil and the switch is going into this plate. The big difference here, though, is when this plate pulls down, when it's energized, there's a second coil here, and this plate here is spring-loaded. You see the spring here. So as soon as this thing moves down, that allows this plate to move out this way. See, the spring will pull it, that will move out. This thing is typically blocking that plate. As soon as it's energized, though, this plate moves out. And then when you remove power from the primary coil, it can't snap back like a normal relay does. It won't de-energize because this plate is blocking it. So it basically is holding that relay in the energized position with no power flow into the coil and will stay energized until something else in the circuit causes this coil to energize, which will then allow it to reset to its normal position. This is a picture of a reset bank. It's kind of hard to see what's going on here, really, but there are each of these pieces here are coils here. Relays. There's six relays here. There are coils for each of those behind here. When power is applied, each one will trigger. There's a spring that will pull this unit down, so all the switches attached to that relay are activated, and they stay activated until this reset coil here fires. These reset coils basically take a lot of power. It's a big rack to reset, so they're typically 115 volt coils rather than the 25 or 50 volts that you usually see. This one here is actually a split relay bank. There's two separate banks on this unit. You can see here there's six switches over here and five more over here, each with their own reset coil. This is off of a Spanish eyes. Generally, it's a little more common to see those split ones like that. Most of the games, if they have a reset bank, have just one. This is a score motor. This is one of two types you typically see. This is the only type I've got a picture of, unfortunately. But basically what you've got here, there's just a motor here. And when that motor turns, there's a shaft here with several cams attached to it. And as the cams turn, you can kind of see on some of them right here, there's an indent here, an indent here, an indent here. And you can see that they're spaced differently on each of these cams. So these other ones here also have these indents in them, but they're hidden from view here. Basically, on these types of motors, it kind of goes in sequence. If you start at the left and move forward, you'll see that the notches reach 10 or 20 degrees or whatever difference between them, so that they're evenly spaced. So as the motor turns, there's a, on the switch stack here, there's just a stack of switches with a, there's a metal bar here that's riding on the cam. And as the cam, when you hit the indents, or in the case of some of these, some of the cams, rather than having indents, have raised spots, the indent or the raised spot will activate the switches and close all the open switches, open all the closed switches. So this is how the motor is used to control sequencing of events. If you need something to happen before something else happens, you know, you power it by a switch on one cam, and then power the next thing by a switch on the other cam, so that one will happen and then the other. This type of squirt motor basically makes a half of a rotation for each cycle. So if we see this indent in this cam here, there's another indent directly across from it, 180 degrees. So that it'll make one half a revolution, all the switches will fire. This switch on the last one here typically will fire five times. Sometimes you'll have another one that has three notches on it. You can, you know, for scoring 300 or 500 points. Anybody have any questions on just the basics of how these work? All right. I'm going to talk about two primary types of problems. One big thing that happens in EM as well as solid state games that we're not going to talk too much about is shorts. If you've got a short and you're blowing a fuse, schematic can be of some help sometimes, but generally it's just digging through the game and trying to figure out what's touching that's not supposed to. So I'm not going to get into that too much. The other problems we see aside from the short is either something's happening that you're not expecting to happen, or something's not happening that you think should be happening. So, I mean, those are really basically that, you know, what you're going to see. But, like, for things that aren't happening that should be, you've got, you know, either a light's not lit that should be, you're not seeing a score, counting on any of the targets, or a pop bumper's not popping, and the ball hits the bumper. So, basically, you know, you're either going to see a light's not lit up, you're not hearing the sound that you want to hear, or something's not making the ball do what you want it to do. Examples of things that are happening that shouldn't be is we've got that, say the score is registering on the wrong player. If you're playing player one, you start seeing points go out of player two. You know, obviously, that's not right, and you can track that down with the schematic to figure out why that's happening. If points are ringing up when you're not hitting any switches, or if your score motor runs continuously, which is a very common problem with NEMs, it seems like most of the games you find, a good chunk of them, are like that. You know, at least it's a startup. There's a startup, you try to start a game, the score motor keeps running. Basically, it does that because it doesn't think it's finished its reset sequence, and it still thinks it's supposed to be doing something, and it keeps trying to do it, and it's not happening, so it's going to keep going on. All right, this slide should have gone back, but this is just a diagram of what's on the stepper unit. I don't have an actual photo of the stepper unit. But this shows an example of the back end of one of the steppers. Like I said, the steppers will have a coil that ratchets it up one step at a time, and generally, you know, some of them will be able to reset back to starting position, or some will reset one step at a time downward. This is from a manual, from a Williams game manual. It's one of the nice things in the Williams manuals. You don't quite get this on the schematic, but Williams, for all their stepper units and for all their, even all the relays, they've got a nice little diagram that shows what's wired to each position on the stepper unit and how the stepper unit works. So just give an idea how stepper units work. You can see that this one's got a printed circuit board. Some of them either have a printed circuit board like this, or there's just a series of rivets in a nice circle. You know, you can have two or three circles, concentric circles of rivets, and you've got these fingers that come out from the middle, and as the disc, as the stepper unit rotates, these fingers rotate. So each time it steps up, like this finger here would move one position, move to the next position, and then here. Typically, it looks like this one doesn't have any, maybe, or maybe this point here is you have some fingers that are just connected to ground. There'd be a ground finger right here in the middle here, so all the fingers that are there connected to common, I should say. And then it'll just flow, it'll, as it's going, you'll have current flowing from that common to the, you know, to the ends of these fingers and then out to wherever they're wired up. So here, these fingers down here, these connections on the circuit board, there's no wires connected on this game. Here you can see they show the color of each wire, and you can find that on the schematic. It's the reason there are pieces here that aren't connected is because these are basically fairly common units. you know, a lot of them, they were able to develop standard pieces here and then use them in different games, and just by the way they wire them up, kind of controls how it functions within the game. But you can see that some of these fingers are shaded in different patterns. You can see, and they're saying they're insulated, so those are not connected to the common in the middle. It's just these two fingers are connected to each other. So as it steps in this position, this yellow-blue wire that's wired up here is going to be connected to this plate, to the gray-red wire. If it steps one position over, this gray-red now is going to be connected to the green-yellow instead. And the same thing here. Anytime you see a pair of insulated fingers that are shaded the same way, that's going to make a connection between those two fingers. All right, and this gives basically how you're going to use the schematic. We'll get into looking at what's actually on the schematic, but how you go about looking at it is if you've got a lamp that's not lighting, basically you're going to find that lamp on the schematic and trace it to determine what relay or stepper unit is responsible for lighting the lamp. The lamp circuits are usually pretty simple. Basically, a light comes on when the relay it's wired to is energized, or when the stepper unit it's wired to is in the right position. So basically, almost all the lamps on the game are only controlled by one possibility. So it's a real simple circuit to trace. So we'll take a look at those first just to get an idea what a circuit looks like, and then we'll look a little bit at some coil circuits. If the lamp is controlled by a relay, basically, you know, once you find the schematic what relay controls that lamp, you can look at the relay, see if it is energizing. And if it is, then it's, you know, probably you need to adjust the switches on that relay or clean them, or check the wiring from that relay to the lamp itself. If the relay is not energized, then you're going to go up and look in the coil part of the schematic and find out what's supposed to energize that coil, find out why it's not energizing. For lamps lit by a stepper, basically you need to take a look at the stepper, see if it's in the position you expect it to be in. If it's in the right position, but the lamp's not lighting, then you're going to go check continuity through the stepper rivets and fingers, make sure that the fingers are making good connection to the circuit board or to the rivets on the board. If the stepper's not in the expected position, then again, you're going to find the coil for that stepper on the schematic, find out why that stepper did not step when it was supposed to, and trace that circuit out. Okay. All right. Everybody in the back read that schematic? Okay. Nobody in the front can read it either. And that's one of the big problems with schematics, really. They don't work on the computer. You can have them. It's nice to be able to download them if they're out there, so you can try and find a piece you're looking for if you're really in a bind. But it really helps to have these on paper. I mean, they're big, but you can really see what's going on. And here, it's really tough at this level to, you know, to understand any detail what's going on. And then as you zoom in, you lose, you know, what, how it's relevant to the pieces around it. So it's hard. But even at this resolution, we can start looking at it and understand what's on the schematic. We just start breaking it down into pieces. First off is the line voltage section. There's very little, typically, on a pinball machine that runs at line current. Here you've got, this is basically all we've got here. There's a picture of the plug. You know, we plug into the wall. There is an outlet built into the game, so you can plug your soldering iron into and whatnot, or your lamp. There's a fuse, and the master power switch, and then you go right to the transformer. So there's really nothing working on 110 volts in this game at all, except for that, you know, electrical outlet. Most of what we're looking at here today is from the Williams Little Chief. If you're interested, pretty much everything we're going to see on here from the Williams. Williams games are mostly what I've come across, so that's what we'll see. I do have a sheet of schematic symbols from Gottlieb Queen of Hearts, so we can take a look at that too, just to get an idea of some of the symbols that are on the schematic. But basically, like I say, you can see here everything up at the front here. This area here, you'll usually find this at one end or edge of the schematic somewhere. You've got, you know, because basically the power is coming into it, you expect that to be right at the end.
Is that what you have this on the wall to show?
Yeah, so we've got here just, I mean, you, obviously you're not going to see this. After the I think there's one more seminar after mine. I'm going to hang these up out in the hallway if anybody wants to look at it in more detail. But basically, here we've got a, this is a guy named Atlantis. It's a Bally kickoff, I believe. And this is a little Williams Swinger. So it kind of shows for the different manufacturers how they're laid out. They kind of change from era to era a little bit, but give you a little bit of idea. So here on the Bally, you can see the high line voltage and the transformers right here. There's for Williams, and then the Gottliebs down here at the bottom. But it helps, you know, if you just look, you know, like this screen you just saw, it just looks like a mess. I think that's what a lot of people see when they see schematics. And if anybody can't read them, it's just a big group of wires, and they don't really know where to start. I found, I know people seem to have difficulty with that. Some people can understand, and a lot of people just don't even want to try and think about it. So hopefully I can help people out here today, at least get you started, so at least you know where to start, and you can start looking at your community. Okay, then after the transformer, here's another thing that we can break it down real easy. We'll go back one slide. As you see, you've got power coming in the transformer. The transformer is just basically a set of coils that are wound in such a way that when power is running through this main coil you see here, it's generating a magnetic field, and then that magnetic field is picked up by some other coils wound around the same frame, and then they generate voltage on the outbound. So here you've got a small coil here. This is generating 6 volts here from this end of the coil to this end. And that's going to drive your lamps. And then you've got another coil here that's generating, which I believe 24 volts in this game. So from here, you've got one common leg basically here, and then you've got 6 volts between this line and this yellow wire coming off the transformer here is 6 volts, and then between the black wire coming off here and the yellow wire here, you've got a 24 volt difference. And you can see here, there's another piece off the transformer that nothing's connected to here, but that's your low voltage connection there, high tap. So if you're getting low coil voltage to your solenoids, they're not firing well, you can remove this wire, move it over here, you'll get a little bit more voltage out of it. But the next picture then shows where those wires coming off of the transformer go. You see, you've got the common. Basically, you're going to always see this common leg just coming straight across the middle of the schematic. You can kind of see it. It's not real clear on these drawings, unfortunately. There's a yellow line up the middle here, and you can't see it too well with the yellow shading. And then the same thing here, you've got, this is like what we're looking at on the screen here, across the middle. With the Bally, they've typically got their common wire goes all the way across the middle of the schematic, then it goes up and doubles back and goes along the top also. We'll talk about that a little bit more when we get a little bit farther on. But seeing that, I mean, that kind of naturally breaks it down into sections right there. This makes it a little bit more clear. I mean, anybody, if you've got any kind of electrical knowledge at all, you realize an electrical circuit is just basically wire from, you know, one voltage to another and with a load somewhere in the middle there. You know, that's basically completing a circuit. If you don't have a load, but you've got a connection, you've got a short, you're going to be blowing a fuse. But if you've got a load, that'll complete a circuit. So it's possible from anywhere from this, the 24-volt line to the common, you can trace actually multiple circuits through here, but you'll be able to trace basically for each circuit, there'll be generally being just one load involved there. So you can, a load here is either going to be a coil or a light bulb, basically, or the score motor also will show up in here. But those are the typical loads you're going to see in these games. We'll get to that, how you go about tracing the circuits for each of those loads. But that shows you everything between the high voltage and the common there is going to be your coils and your score motor. Over in this last section here, this schematic actually has a section of DC current. I mean, the gains are mostly AC. I know Williams and some of the other ones also, especially towards the later years, started controlling their pop bumpers and flippers on DC, get a little bit more power. So you see that that's separate, it's kind of tailing on. We're still using that same 24 voltage, but in the middle here we've got a bridge rectifier, and then everything over here is actually DC. intersection here, it's kind of purple, it's supposed to be blue, is all your lamps. So those are down here. The light bulbs you got are just driven down here. You can see there's less bulbs than there are coils, at least in general. There's some shortcuts here. This section here is the GI. You'll see that when you zoom in. Yeah, it shows like four light bulbs there. Obviously, you got more bulbs than that on the play field, but there are some things where it's not critical to show every little piece of information, so it's not going to show that. The section down here is just the key to the schematic. It gives some examples of what the symbols that are used on the schematic look like, so you know what you're looking at. It gives a list of abbreviations and also helps you find coils on the chart. And this section here is just showing some information on the score motor. It shows, basically, it'll help you figure out the timing of the score motor. It'll show you what the score motor drives at each step. So that's the information presented there. I think I must have been missing a slide. We didn't really talk too much about what a schematic is and what it isn't. I apologize for that. I should have talked about that before we got into this. But score motor or a schematic is a logical map of what's going on in the EM game. It's not a wiring diagram. People use that term, wiring diagram. I don't have a problem with that being used, but wiring diagram maybe a little more clearly show you how things are wired part to part. This isn't going to do that. It's going to basically tell you that, yes, this is connected. This piece is connected to this piece. And this relay is wired to the score motor, but it's not going to show you the route of the wire. It's not going to tell you where in the game you're going to find that relay, where you're going to find the score motor. Physical location is up to you for the most part. You can get some hints out of the schematic occasionally, but this is more logical. Got a question?
No, I think maybe you look through descriptions of ladder diagram.
That's true. I mean, ladder diagram, whoever, if you're familiar with the term ladder diagram, it is more showing where how things relate from step to step. How things are related together, but it doesn't show the physical layout. And I think that's why some people have problems with schematics too, aside from even just the fact that they just look at it and see a bunch of wires and don't understand what it is. You have to be able to visualize it and understand how it's related to what's going on. And as I was putting this together, a couple months ago I noticed on Yahoo, there was a message that came up in the Yahoo News how one out of three British people cannot read a road map. I don't know, that kind of surprised me. If you can't do that, you're going to have a real hard time doing this in the schematic. Because I mean, at least on the roadmap, you've got lines drawn out on this paper that basically follow exactly the roads that you see. Especially today with something like Google Maps and all that, where you can actually see a photo from above. You got a pretty good idea what roads look like. You should be able to hook a map up to them. This is something completely different because these lines don't actually follow anything that you can actually look at. All right, zoom in on a couple of sections here to get an idea of what we've actually got to look at. This is the key section that I mentioned. Just like a normal road map, you do have a key and that I think I had another word for this, but it uses one thing that's going to show you the symbols that are used. Doesn't show you a whole lot here. It shows you this is a normally open switch. Actually, we'll zoom in on that a little bit more. But it shows some symbols here. There's some details here. It's got the part number for the transformer and the motor. Coil locations, relay coil locations, and abbreviations. Obviously, abbreviations and symbols that are used on the schematic are going to be important to you. Once you've done a couple of these, once you understand and have used them, they stay pretty constant, especially between manufacturers. Now, there is some difference from manufacturer to manufacturer, and if you're looking back, games made in the 40s and 50s, you're going to see some things a little different than what you see in the 60s or 70s, but for the most part, once you've done a few, you don't have to refer to this too often, except for the coil locations. This is the big thing that changes from game to game, and that's an important piece of information to help you track down what's going on. But here's that the switch symbol part. There's a normally open switch. So we saw the switches on the relays that aren't making contact until that relay energizes. This is the symbol you're going to see on the schematic for that. just shows basically the gap there. It's not open until the MUSTAT relay is energized. Normally closed switch opens when actuated, so this one here, that is normally conducting unless the relay is firing. And make break switch. Here there's a switch, we saw that on the photo of the relay we saw. Generally it's going to be conducting down this half of the switch. Until that relay is energized, then it's going to conduct out this way. That's assuming these switches are part of a relay. We've got switches on the score motor itself, like we saw earlier. The stepper units, the fingers on the circuit board and on the rivets are not generally shown as switches on the schematic. They're shown as a block that shows basically a set of switches in line that will be energized based on the position they're in. But there are some other switches generally involved on the stepper units too. There's, when the coil does fire, most of them will have an end of stroke switch on that coil. So as the coil pulls in, it's going to activate some switches on there. So you'll see those too. So not all the switches we're talking about are on relays. There's also the playfield switches. If you've got a rollover lane switch, it's going to look just like this on the schematic. When the ball hits it, it closes that switch. It'll energize a coil or turn on a light. The circle around the switch generally indicates that the switch is activated by the motor. So this is a switch on one of those cams that we saw on the score motor. Some of the older schematics I've seen don't have that. You'll just have a comment that it's a score motor A, or it'll tell you which of the switch stacks on the motor that switch is activated by or is associated with. But generally you're going to see this circle around it. Another part of the thing in the symbols area here is generally, explain the wire codes. A little bit more into the schematics, that the schematic generally will show you which wire color is used between each connection. So you can use that to trace issues. If you can actually tell the color of the wires on your gains, most of them I have, they all look gray. But so no matter what color it says here, it's not too helpful. They show an example here. WR indicates a white wire with a red tracer. So if you see anything labeled on the schematic, it's WR, that's the color wire you're looking for. You may see a WR somewhere, and then somewhere else on the schematic, see WR1. It just means, there's only so many colors, so they had to use a white wire with a red tracer again as part of a different circuit in the game. And that one there just to help indicate to you that it is a separate circuit than that WR. And this is important. I know I've seen this on all the Bally and Williams schematics I've looked at. I don't know if I've seen it on Gottlieb's, but it's generally, I think it holds true, that all interlock relays are in latched position. I'm going to zoom back quite a few slides here just to go on. Too much. Okay, obviously on a simple relay, it's obvious. This is a normally open switch. When this plate pulls down, it's going to close the switch. So it's real clear what a normally open, normally closed switch is. And what's real obvious, when you turn the machine off, this is the state this relay is going to return to. So it's obvious. That's normally open. That's its normal state. On the interlock relay here, if you ignore this piece here, this looks just like a normal relay, but on the schematic, it's actually, these switches are labeled opposite. Is it when that note we saw said that all interlock relays are in latch position. Latch is when this coil pulls down and this plate is locked in place. So when you see it normally open on a interlock relay on the schematic, that means it's open when the relay is down, like a normal relay would be energized. And really the switches are the opposite on those. It's confusing sometimes trying to figure out to remember which state is latched and which isn't, but that's generally true here on these interlock relays.
Switches saying it's always going to be it's always going to be in a down position when it's off?
It won't be. That's the thing with this and stepper units, anything like that. Even a score motor, you really don't know what position that's going to be in when it's off. It could be anywhere. If you turn your game off while the score motor is turning, that's going to be in the middle somewhere. Score monitors will generally find their own hold position when you turn it back on. But this, it could be in either position. Generally on this, I don't like the game over relay, it's typically an interlock relay. It is wired up in such a way that when you turn the power on to the game, it will immediately fire one of these coils to get it into the proper position, the latch position. So we'll do that. But, you know, even though there's no real definition on this, what's addressed and what's not, what position it's going to be when you turn it off, the schematic, when the schematic says it's normally open, that means it's in the latch position. So that's something you really got to be careful with.
I can tell you the standard for Gottlieb.
What's that?
On a Gottlieb, you run through a complete reset sequence till it's done and then pull the plug, and that's the state of all the relays. So I'll explain the state of every latchable relay.
Okay, so after you reset to start a game?
Yeah, then pull the plug.
Pull the plug, okay. I know that's what Clay Slate mentioned, I think, on the reading schematics. It says that it's all, the schematic is drawn to ball, you know, ball in the shooter lane ready to start the game. Mm-hmm. That explains where that wording comes from, I guess, because that wording kind of throws me a little bit, because sometimes it's not, I'm not sure that that's specifically true, but yeah, if that's the way they explain it, that makes sense. Okay. All right, this is, I just drew up a switch, or pulled these pieces off of another schematic. This is an older Gottlieb schematic, so the pictures look a little bit different than what we've been seeing, but just to get an idea what you're going to see on the schematic for the individual symbols. Coil is always just a curly piece of wire here, basically wire wrapped around a post. So any coil you see, whether it be a relay coil, you know, flipper coil, pop-upper, you know, anything that's going to be powered that way, it's going to look like that. Normally open switch, this is the most common that you're going to see. But I've seen a few that have something different for that, like an older Williams schematic. But most of them you're going to see that. And if you look at the key of your schematic, you're going to see these things, and you won't be surprised. It's easy enough to figure out if there's something done a little bit differently. This is the main thing that's different here. The make-break switch that we saw before, and we'll see them again when we look back at the Williams, there was basically, we saw one wire coming in to, with a normally open, normally closed switch on it. Here on this arrow of Gottlieb, they've got two switches next to each other with just a little arrow connecting together to show that that's a make-break switch. So you got it like that, or you got here, that they're not parallel, but they are still related. There's a make-break switch on the tilt relay, is what this is saying. And, the normally closed position is connecting this way. When the tilt relay energizes, it's going to go that way. Lamps. You either see it like this, a circle with a little filament-type drawing in the middle, or a lot of times it's just an empty circle. That's more common these days. I think the older ones tend to have the coil, but most of the newer ones I see just have empty circles. Fuse is just a little curly wire here. Most of those you're going to see right at the transformer. You're going to see, you've got your main line fuse going into the transformer, and then each leg off of that transformer is going to have a fuse in it. And that's where you'll see it for the most part. You know, if you get into games like Chicago Coin or some others, they've got fuses all over the place. Here, this is what I was saying. This is an older one. This does not show, does not put a circle around the switch to indicate that it's on a spoiler. It just shows motor 2C. So that's telling you, if you look at the motor diagram, you can understand where switch 2C is at. Basically giving you the cam that it's on, which stack it's in. Score motor is just shown like that. It's a circle, little things on the sides. There again, there's like a big break switch. You don't see those spread out like that too much anymore. Although you do see, that make break switch that we saw before, where it's just two switches next to each other with one common wire going into them. Sometimes you'll see it drawn as a make break, but one of the pieces won't be connected on the schematic. It won't be shown. You can find that switch somewhere else on the schematic, and it will have just the make section connected in that place, and the break won't be connected. So it'll appear on the schematic as two separate switches, but they're actually related together. Again, the transformer, just the coil with two separate coils coming off, or other coils attached to it. This is what's shown for the disk unit. A little bit different than what we see in the more modern ones. Normally in the more modern ones, there's a rectangle around here. But basically what it is, it's pairs of contacts. Like we mentioned before, like there's fingers that are in the same shading. If you've got the fingers that are connecting together as it rotates, this shows you basically for the first pair, actually the way these are numbered, a lot of times you see them where just, you know, you have one pair and indicate position one, another indicate position two, three, four, just nicely in order. This one here, I don't think is showing in order. It's more showing what position that disc unit's in. If it's in 15, if it's in 9, if it's in 10, 26. So this is on the 10,000 unit. Yeah, basically, this is when this game was coming out. I believe this is the part where you can control when the next digit increases. You know, it's, you add up thousands, but getting up to 90,000, 100,000 is not necessarily advanced 100,000. You can set it so instead of taking 10 steps to advance the 100,000 unit, it'll actually take 12 or 26 or 15. It's really odd the way that you could adjust the scoring on those games. And here again, the disk unit. This is for the 10,000 unit. You can see if it's in position 1, this line up here is connected to this line. If it's in position 2, then this line is there. Basically, when, like I said before, when something's not working, there's probably a coil that's not firing or a coil that's firing when it's not supposed to. So the main thing you're going to be looking at when you get into schematics is you're going to be looking, trying to find a coil on the schematic and what is supposed to be controlling that coil. So usually on these, you've got an actual chart that will tell you. It's very frequently broken up into two sections. You have the relay coils here, and there's other coils, like your coils on the disk units and the coils on the pop bumpers. And there's just a little key number here that will tell you where on the schematic you can find it. Just like on a map, there are numbers along the edges on the schematics to help you find individual pieces on there. So this is important because otherwise you have to dig through the whole schematic. If you know what coil you're looking for, you can find it a lot quicker by just looking at the key. You can narrow down your search for what's going on. Score motor, this is the way Williams does it. They've got basically a drawing of each cam. You can see on here the relative positions of the indents on the cams. This is when it's in home position. This first switch is in its indent. When it starts rotating, there's an arrow that shows which way it rotates, so you can tell it after these switches are done activating, these are going to activate, then these pretty much steps down from the side. Here you've actually got one that activates the same time as this one, I think, but the switches are held down for a longer time. You can see the indent there is wider. And then the impulse relays at the end here fire five times as the motor makes its half turn. That shows detail there. They show for each step, each switch on the motor cam, it shows exactly what's connected to it. Here's the lamps. We'll take a quick look at lamps. Here we showed on the schematic where you've got the blue wire coming off the transformer. This is your 6 volts. Here, it's more than really just one wire. Here we've got two separate fuses, so there's basically two circuits of lights. Each one's got its own fuse. You can see it goes through the fuse. These are all your GI lights. They're basically always connected from power to common. There's no switches or anything controlling that. These other lamps, like here, you got the tilt light. The tilt light is, you can trace a circuit from the 6 volts to common going through the light, and there's a switch on the tilt relay. So you can see that's normally open. This tilt light will only come on if the tilt relay is energized. Same thing here, you have credit units. So you can see that lights are basically controlled by one switch. Here you got the coin unit. Coin unit steps up every time you put a coin in or start a game with the credit button. So you can see in position 1, the 1 can play light is lit up. If you put another coin in, you're starting start a 2-player game, this position is going to move to position 2, and the 2 can play light will be on. Player unit tells you which player is up. You can see as it steps up, it completes a circuit to each of these individual lights. Yeah, that's basically all you've got on the lamps. They're fairly straightforward. And one other thing that this kind of shows here is there are, and I'm showing these lines going all the way across the schematics. These aren't quite as simple as that makes it look. There are, at points along here, you'll see some grades. There'll be a switch so that here, what you got to the left, right to the left, sorry, right to the right of the transformer, this is what's going to be energized at all times while the game is on. Basically, your coin slot switches and coils there, those are always on. You're going to have somewhere here, there's going to be a game relay or a game over relay that will cut off power to the rest of this leg so that these next set of solenoids will only be energized if actually playing a game. So your pop bumpers aren't working, your flippers, there's no power to any of that stuff until you've started the game. And then there'll be some other pieces further on. There might be some, you know, like kick-out holes that are always energized as long as you've got a game, or even sometimes those are energized when you're not in the game. But then there'll be like the tilt relay will be here so that flippers and bumpers won't work when you got tilt, but your ball kickers will still work so that any ball that falls in the hole while you're tilted will still come back to you. So you got to watch that. There are some switches along there that break that leg down, but still you're generally looking, I mean, you should be able to know whether you're in game mode or not. You're generally looking between those two lines that I've drawn there. You're looking for a circuit between those two lines to try and get to what you want. I'm not going to cover this too much, but you can see that compared to the layup section, this gets really complicated up here, especially in this area. This is an area where you probably won't be going into too much. This is, like I said, your coins, starting up a game. This area here, you can see all these adjustment jacks all over the place. That's basically set to determine whether you have your game set up for, you know, one play for a quarter, one for a dime, you know, three for a quarter. Basically, depending on where you put this wire, where you put this plug in the jack, it changes the circuit based on all that. So it gets pretty complex there. Like I say, generally you're not going to be even needing to look at that unless you really are worried about setting your game up for coin play and how much you're getting paid for it. Here's the score motor. You can see here, you want to trace the circuit. You've got power here, common down here. You trace through the score motor. There's a jack next to the score motor generally, so you can turn the motor off so you can move it by hand when you're searching problems. But then if you come down here, you can see there's several different paths you can get to come here. So any number of things can start the score motor turning. You've got the coin relay, 50-point relay, eject unit relay, several different things here that will keep it going, or that will start it going. Something you'll always see in the score motor circuit is there'll be a normally closed or normally open switch on the index cam itself, so that when the game, you know, when the score motor's at rest, the switch is open. But once you move out of that rest position, that switch closes, and that switch basically just keeps the motor turning until it gets back to that position. So any of these relays or any switches that energize the motor only have to be on long enough to get the motor started. Once the motor is started, it will keep going on its own through that switch that's, you know, on itself. Once it gets back to that home position, that switch will open again and the motor should stop, unless, you know, whatever triggered in the first place feels you need more than one cycle. You know, like if you're coming down the bonus at the end of a ball or something like that, sometimes you'll need to go around a few times. Or when you're resetting the scoring wheels at the start of the game, same thing. And, okay, that's just a little bit zoomed in on the score motor, showing different things. Target reset relay, 500 relay, auto relay. That may not actually be a zoom in of that picture. That might be from a different schematic. It's blowing some of this up, it got confusing, or it wasn't too clear. I just want to get into this a little bit to show, again, how complicated this can get. These coils up here are all the score reels for each player. So you've got a first player, 10-point view. Second player, 10-point view. So you've got all four players, they're 10-point score reel, 100-point score reels, 1,000-point score reels. And you can see that there's two different things, basically, that make a score motor or a score reel move, either when you're resetting at the beginning of the game or when you're actually scoring points in the game. You can see there's actually two separate paths to each drum unit. They are not connected. You can see here, these are player units. This is all one unit. basically with the player unit's got several pairs of fingers on it. So you can see each set of fingers pretty much has its own little piece showing up on the schematic. And so when you've got 10 points, you can see there's a switch here that's actuated by the 10-point relay. When you hit anything that's worth 10 points, it's going to activate the 10-point relay. 10-point relay goes into the player unit. Based on which player you're on, it will then connect to that player's score wheel and make that score wheel advance once. When you're actually resetting at the beginning of the game, there's a completely different circuit to the score wheel. It's going to come through here, going through the reset relay. There's a reset relay that's continuously triggering while the game's resetting. And then this is the normally open switch on the score wheel. It's open at zero. So this is what's responsible for stopping the score wheel from continuously going when you're resetting. It's going to just keep going until it gets to zero. As soon as it gets to zero, the switch should open and it should stop. So if you've got a switch, a score wheel that's continuing to run at startup, this is the switch that's responsible. I'm sure people are familiar with that already, but this is where you can just see it right on the diagram that's responsible. I think that was about as far as I was going to get anyway. I'm going to take these, like I said, I'll hang these up out the hallway if people want to get a little closer look at them. I'm going to hang around for a little while too. If anybody's got any specific questions, want to get a little more detail on what we really covered here, I'd be happy to answer the questions. I have some cards. If anybody wants to take a business card too, feel free to contact me if you've got issues with schematics that you're trying to figure out. I'd like to help out. Always looking for more schematics too, so if you want to help me out with a schematic that I don't have, or that you need help with, that'd be great. I guess we want to wrap up. All right, like I say, I'll be out in the hall if anybody wants to talk to me.